Do you have a reputation? And if so, I wonder what it is. Is it good? Is it bad? We can have reputations, and it could be, it could be one way or the other. Let me give you some examples. Who's this person? Mother Teresa. And what was her reputation? Compassion, love, care for the work that she did in Calcutta, in India. Good reputation. Who's this? It's Albert Einstein, as you almost all guessed. And what was his reputation? Genius. Yeah. It wasn't hair products, was it? Yes, he had a reputation. E equals MC squared. Who'd have thought it? But what about these two? You all know them. These are the Cray twins. From the East End of London. What, would it be 60s, 70s? 60s, probably. And what was their reputation? Notorious gangsters. As D.I. Regan would probably say, villainy. They were villains. Yeah, they had a reputation. It wasn't a good one. And what about this last one? Guy Fawkes. Glad no one said William Shakespeare. Yes, Guy Fawkes. And what was his reputation? Blew up Parliament, you did. Absolutely, John. Very good. His reputation was treason. So severe that since then, for the 400 years since then, we've had on the 5th of November bonfire night in this country, we make bonfires and people put an effigy of Guy Fawkes on the top. Such is his reputation. But I wonder whether that reputation is entirely just. Interestingly, he wasn't the ringleader. And you never get to hear the name of Robert Gatsby, who's the actual ringleader. He was just the guy who's lighting the fuse. I'm not justifying it, but he's the one with a reputation because, of course, lighting the fuse, he's the one that got caught. Which brings me to the character of our study today, Thomas. And what is Thomas's reputation? Doubting. Isn't it interesting? We don't know very much about him, about his background. The one thing we do know is he had a reputation for doubting. So much so that he's referred to as Doubting Thomas. So much so that 2,000 years later, if anyone hesitates about believing something that they're told by someone, people refer to them as a Doubting Thomas. But I believe that's not entirely fair. And even if it was, this imperfection that he demonstrated, which I'm going to suggest is one that every single one of us shares with Thomas, we all doubt, was not the source of his rejection or downfall. It was actually the source of his acceptance and growth. And out of this came great potential. This morning, I want to challenge our view of what happens when we doubt and the negativity that is often attached to that reputation. And I want to challenge it because I recognize that so many, even within our church, struggle sometimes. We all struggle with doubts in our faith. So let me have a look at this man, Thomas. In John's version of this, these accounts and the details that he gives, he's also referred to as Didymus. Didymus sounds like a small mouse, doesn't it? But he's not. Thomas is his Aramaic name. Didymus is his Greek name. And both of the names mean the same thing. They mean a twin. And that's all, I suggest, pretty much, that he had in common with the Cray brothers. Because this man might have a reputation for some really negative attributes, i.e. doubting, but he had some really positive attributes. He displayed incredible loyalty and courage. Let me give you a couple of examples. When the other disciples tried to keep Jesus from going to Bethany to raise Lazarus from the dead because they were concerned that he might be stoned to death, which had been the threat that had been made earlier, it was Thomas that said this, "Let us also go that we may die with him." This is the kind of guy that you want to have a bit of enthusiasm when things are tough. I mean, to be fair, he's got a bit of a fatalistic streak in him, which you don't always want. But he shows loyalty. He shows real courage. He's also responsible for asking a question of Jesus that caused Jesus to give a response that we hold on to in our faith that is so crucial. Thomas said to him a bit later on in John's Gospel, "Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way?" And Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So I ask the question of Thomas, is he a doubter? Or is he actually an intense and deep thinker who starts to come to the truth of what it is to be doubting? So let me set the scene of where this incident takes place. I want to take us back to Easter. And I do that deliberately. Easter is 3 weeks ago. It sometimes feel like it was a lot longer than that. Just 3 weeks. Isn't it interesting how quickly we jump on and get wrapped up in life and all the stuff that goes on around us? And yet Easter is that place of such intensity, such importance with the cross and the resurrection, that if we don't take those things, those unbelievably enormous events of such magnitude into every day and hang the basis of our lives on those events that took place, then we end up missing the experience that God has for us on a daily basis, and we open the door to doubts coming in. So I, with no apology, take us back to Easter. But it was Easter when these events took place. The first part of our reading, when Jesus appeared with the disciples, took place on the evening of Easter Sunday. This was the day that Jesus was raised from the dead and the disciples come together. Now there are just 11 of them. Judas Iscariot, of course, has already killed himself. But they're not all 11 in the room. It seems that they met in this locked room, but Thomas wasn't with him. He was missing out on what God was about to do. And you can picture the scene. What must Thomas have been going through the mind of Thomas at the time? Friday, devastated. His friend, his Lord, the one who promised so much, has been crucified. Saturday, reeling with the shock of what he'd seen the day before. Sunday, perhaps by now so disillusioned that he doesn't even gather with his fellow disciples for an evening meal. And perhaps it's therefore on Monday that the disciples go and find Thomas. They want to tell him about what's happened in his absence, what he's missed out on. And can you imagine the conversation that must have taken place? "Thomas, oh, we were in that upper room, you know, the one where we used to meet, and we were behind locked doors because we were scared of what might happen. We might be arrested." Can you imagine? Behind that locked door, suddenly Jesus materialized. And he just held out his hands and he showed us the jagged hole in his hand where the nail had penetrated. And then he lifted back his cloak and we could see the scar on his side where the spear had pierced him. But he wasn't weak. He wasn't sick. He wasn't dying. He was alive. He'd risen. Oh, Thomas, if you'd just been there. But the problem was, Thomas wasn't there. Thomas, I'm sure, was probably dazed, hurt, maybe feeling a little bitter. He'd missed out. And he's lashing out. Maybe a little bit of him inside saying, yeah, sure he was there. Nice, yes, I'm sure it was great. Trying to be enthusiastic, but he wasn't there. Did it really happen? Have you ever found yourself in a situation where a whole group of friends or family or church family have been present and you've not? And a couple of days later, they've come and they've shared with you. You heard people excited, effusive about how amazing it was and what God was doing. And you've wondered and you've had doubts. A bit of envy, a bit of frustration. You could kick yourself because you weren't there. But then doubt. Was God as real as they say? Could God really speak to me in that way? What about us just recently? That day of prayer and fasting that we had at the beginning of Lent. Such a sense of peace. Such a sense of revelation and calm and the presence of God as individually met around those different stations. A sense of God's presence, unless you were not there. Good Friday. The cross as the centerpiece, the purple robe draped across the cross, the power of that image, and then the words of Scripture and the recognition, Jesus died for me. Oh, what a powerful day that was, unless you weren't there. An Easter Sunday. Lovely day of celebration. Do you remember the video? Veruca Salt. The video that came from that film, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. The obnoxious child. I want it all and I want it now. The picture of the prodigal son. The picture of us in our rebellion. But then the other picture that came with it. The picture of a father with a love so intense, the image of the father of the prodigal son, arms outstretched, the image of God welcoming back the rebellious child. What a picture, what a blessing. Did you get to hear about it? And then last Sunday, and Graham Coventry speaking about new wine, the life of God's people bursting out like bubbles from a champagne bottle. Yes, what an amazing service. A sense of God so present. And yes, I did hear about it. But I wasn't here. And the doubts. Oh, wish I could preach like that. And we're all like that, aren't we? We've all been there. Or should I say, we've all perhaps not been there on the occasion when God seems, from what other people are saying, to do something amazing. And we've missed out. Did God really do what he said he was doing? Was that really such a sense of God's presence that I was practically skipping out of the room, a real spring in my step? Big smile on my face. It was wonderful. Would it really be like that? Well, when you are open to God's Spirit, when we come expecting him to say and do, when our relationship with him is good and healthy, yes, it can be like that. If you were there. But if you're not, then we can become a little skeptical. We can start to allow doubts to creep in, and we can question, and we can wonder if ever we can really, truly be like that with God. Just like Thomas. A And Thomas had seen so much. He'd seen miracles. He'd seen Jesus heal people who'd been blind from birth and give them sight. He'd seen him cast demons out of individuals. He'd seen him on a mountainside turn just a few loaves and a few fish and feed thousands of people. He knew what Jesus could do, but this was different. Jesus had died on the Friday. He was dead. And yet, could he really come back? And it was beyond his capacity to understand. And then there was the locked door. The door was locked. I know Jesus, he was flesh and blood. How could he come through a locked door? Maybe they'd just seen an apparition. Maybe it was a ghost. Maybe they were just drunk too much wine and were imagining it. And the doubts creep in. Because he wasn't there. I wonder, are we actually any different in our faith walk? Sometimes it's really hard to embrace the joy that other people have, especially when we're going through really tough times, and it's hard to feel that sense of what they felt. And we ask those questions. Yes, I've heard that this individual was healed, but does God really heal people today? Or was that just some sort of coincidence? Did it really happen? And you talk about someone coming to know the Lord, but can God really reach out to my family and bring someone that I care about, I love, my spouse, to the Lord when they've rejected God for so many years? Can God really do something amazing in this small church where less than 15 people are below the age of 65? Can God really do something in a place where finances are limited? Can he supply our financial needs when it seems that almost everybody is either not working or retired? Can God really do that? And the doubts creep in. Can God really supply my needs when I don't have a job? Can God guide me and console me in my loneliness and my bereavement? Can God get me out of the rut that I've been living in for so long? Can God reach down to me in the depression that I've been feeling for so long and bring me out of it? Can God really break this habit that's been holding me back for so many years? Can God really find me companionship, just the right person for me in my life? Can God really cause my friends to know something of him, even when they laugh and ridicule? Doubts. We all have doubts. But I ask the question this morning, is it wrong to have doubts? Is God angry with us when we have doubts? Will God smite us if we have doubts? Would God smite Thomas when he had doubts? Look at the second half of the passage. And in the second part, we find it's now 1 week later, and we find the disciples have returned again. And again, they're gathered behind this locked door. But this time, Thomas is with them. And once again, Jesus materialized in their presence, flesh and blood, behind a locked door. A very famous artist illustrated this in the best way that he knew how, which I think is awesome. It's this picture by Caravaggio, The Incredulity of St. Thomas. And he tried to capture the mood of these scriptures. He tried to capture a sense of what was happening. To paint a picture of the intensity of the moment. Here's a man in the foreground, Thomas, returning to the place of his doubt. But as he does so, he meets in that very place Jesus, who returns to answer his doubts. But I don't know whether you can tell from the image or the brightness of it, Do you see any anger in Jesus' face? There's nothing. There's no anger. There's no disappointment. There's no frustration. He's not here to smite Thomas. He's here to invite him to find an answer to his doubt. Notice, it's Jesus who's got his hand on the wrist of Thomas. He's pulling his hand and he's inviting him to investigate. He wants him to do that. Because Jesus is doing what Jesus does. He meets us in our need. And that's the thing about doubt. It gives us an opportunity to answer that need. It's not rebellion, it's questioning. It encourages us to rethink. It's not changing our mind, it's focusing our mind. It's using doubt to pose a question so that we discover an answer that will help us to move forward. Doubt can be an incredibly good and helpful thing. And Jesus met him in just this place. He didn't reject Thomas's doubts, because his doubts were honest, directed to him, and he expressed them loudly. But Thomas was honest with his doubts, and so he was prepared to be in the room where those doubts had arisen. And he returned, and in so doing, he invited God to do something about them. And that is the lesson for Thomas, for us, when we have doubts. Those doubts have a purpose. He wanted to know the truth. And God doesn't have a problem with us having doubts, because he wants us to discover the truth. And once he'd seen what Jesus wanted to show him himself, he believed. He'd been given a reason to, and so he believed. And I believe if Thomas had been there a week earlier and seen Jesus, he wouldn't have expressed any doubts. And there wouldn't be no phrase in the English language doubting Thomas. And the other disciples would have been just in the same position if they'd exchanged positions. He was just doing what was normal to do. Do you ever have doubts about what God is saying? Do you have doubts when you hear about what we believe God is saying to us? What God is doing with us? Well, maybe you need to first take the lesson of this passage. And you need to be in the room when the Lord shows up to speak to everyone else. If you want to discover the Lord, you need to be in the room. But notice that Jesus already knew Thomas's doubts. He didn't need Thomas to say, "I don't believe." He knew. And so he invited him actively to place his finger in the wounds of the holes there. And I ask the question, what is it in your life? What is it in your faith that gives you doubts? Can you not imagine what God can do in this place? Maybe your doubts are that you can't imagine what God can do with you. Who are you? Certainly no Graham Coventry. Maybe that's not your skill set. Can God really use you, and you begin to doubt what he can do? What do with that doubt? Do you ignore it? Just pack it away, like putting it in a suitcase, and then carry it through the rest of your life, go and hide? Or do you actually do what Thomas did? He didn't hesitate, he expressed it. He was actually as intense with his belief as he was with his doubt. And he spoke out. Nobody could accuse this man of being wishy-washy. I want to encourage you, when you doubt, when you have concerns, maybe it's about the way God is working in your life, what God can do in the healing in your life, about your future. Has God really got your future sorted out as you get a little more elderly and you struggle with frailty? You start to perhaps have doubts that God has got it in hand, that he can still use you, that life is going to be rich still. If you have doubts, what are you going to do with them? I want to encourage you, don't dwell in them. Don't wallow in them. Don't carry them with you through the rest of your life. Express them. And not to me, to him. Talk to him. Share them. Because he already knows, so just do it in prayer. That beautiful example that Chris gave to us earlier of the young prostitute with HIV whose life was on a downward trend. She was finished. There was nothing. It was over. You've never been in a desperate situation as her. And she doubted that God even existed. But she got on her knees and she simply said, "If you are there, Lord, reveal yourself." Thomas, us. And you know, you don't have to come to a special service. You don't have to wait till next year or whenever we next have a time of prayer and fasting with prayer stations around the church. You could just go for a walk as that young prostitute did just there and then. If you are struggling with what God is doing with your health, with the family, with the church, with anything, your relationships, go for a walk and talk to the Lord. Know that he's walking with you. Father, I just want to say, I am really struggling with my place in all of this. Lord, I don't see how you can do this. Lord, I don't see how you can overcome this heartache I have for my family who don't know you. Lord, I bring my doubts to you. Just speak it out and watch and expect him to say something, to do something back with you. It's what Lent was about for us. It's why we try to have a more authentic Christian practice in Lent. We read that Maggie Dawn book. We dared to ask questions about things that we thought we'd understood, to be able to ask those things that are uncertain in life. We prayed on a routine basis. For many people, they fasted. Some of you fasted. Maybe it was only in a small way, cutting something out. Maybe you took something new on. Some people fasted for a longer period, and they experienced God speaking as a consequence. You want to experience the Lord? Turn up. Be in the room. Invite him to speak. But share your doubts with him. But I want to say this about those doubts. If you wish, you can carry them with you. Decide, oh, they'll come, they'll sort themselves out in the future. But it's just like carrying around a suitcase for the rest of your life until you've sorted it. Don't do that. Doubts are not intended to be a permanent way of living. They're to be intended to be a temporary way of discovering. Ask God and invite him to answer. And you might be surprised that in the process, as you share those doubts, other people will learn around you. Do you know that's precisely what's been happening in our time for God, and especially the last couple of weeks on a Thursday evening, as people have been honest and shared their doubts, their frailties, their uncertainties, and as we trusted one another, amazing things have come out, and we've sensed God speaking to us. Similar things have happened on a Tuesday, when we're honest enough to share our doubts, our uncertainties. Look at the picture again. Look at the intensity of the two people behind. They're seeing what's happening. And from Thomas's doubts, their faith is affirmed. We bless one another when we bring such things out. And the final benefit, of course, is that there's a change takes place. What did Jesus come to bring? He came to bring peace. What were the first words he spoke on both occasions when he went into the room? Peace be with you. What is the thing that disappears when we have doubts? Uncertainty comes. Sense of unease. Sense of disquiet. Oh, is my relationship with God not right any longer? And Jesus comes to put it right. He comes to bring peace. He's in the business of transforming. The irony is with Thomas that he came And he now has a reputation for being doubting Thomas. But in his doubts, he came and turned that around and ended up transforming incredulous skepticism and making a profound statement of faith as he said, "My Lord and my God." None of the other disciples came out with a statement like this. What profound transformation. "My Lord and my God." That's a heartfelt appreciation. In the image, you notice that his finger's there, pointing in the side. Jesus is putting that finger right there in the wound. But if you can see clearly enough, can you see that his eyes are not looking in that place? His attention's not there. He doesn't need that. What's really interesting about this, the passage doesn't tell us whether he accepted that invitation to touch, even though the image does show it. The passage gives an implication he probably didn't bother. He didn't need to. Because in inviting the Lord to reveal himself to him, he was so overwhelmed with the Lord's presence. He came with questions, but he's just absorbed with the presence of Jesus. I'm sure that young prostitute that came and came asking so honestly, "Do you exist, God?" I'm sure had 1,000 questions. How am I going to overcome HIV? How am I going to get a job? How am I going to have finances? How am I going to get my son back? What will my family do? Is life going to go on? And all the other questions. But she didn't need those answers. And my experience, when I come to God with doubts about my faith, about where I am, about what I can do, about what he wants of me, is that so often it's not the specific answers that he gives to all my questions. He simply comes in his presence so powerfully, in such magnitude, such a sense of his presence, that I am filled with assurance. And I don't need those little answers, because God is so much bigger than them. And I pray that that's your experience too. So is God angry when we come and we have doubts? No. Do you remember that passage, 1 Corinthians 13, that is so often used at weddings about love? Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. Do you know the passage? It's often presented as the ideal of love. This is what you aspire to. In my view, it is this aspiration that is impossible for God's people. We will never get there. No human beings ever reach that. Because actually, it's a demonstration of God's love. It's his kind of love which is being shown in that passage. That's what we do aspire to, but he is the only one that has ever shown it. It's the kind of love of God that we saw through the prodigal father, the father of the prodigal son, I should say, on Easter Sunday. It's that love. It's the love that we sang of in the last hymn we've just sung. And it is the love that 1 week after Easter, Jesus demonstrated to Thomas, where he showed kindness, patience, where he did not remember wrongs. This was the love that Jesus showed to Thomas in his doubts. When you get doubts, don't let them pull you down. Know the God of grace and come and meet with him. And is that the end of the story? When we have doubts, have we blotted our copybook? Do we need to start again and rebuild our faith? No. It's just that when we come honestly and invite God to meet them and address those doubts, then we give him the opportunity to do something else. And that was the case for Thomas. Thomas went on to be anything but a doubter. He went on to be an apostle and to be an inspirational leader. Church tradition tells us that he went to Babylon, modern-day Iraq, the area around the river Tigris and Euphrates. Then he would move on from that into Persia, Iran of today, and ended up on the west coast of India, where he apparently established churches among the Brahmin groups of Indians. 1600 was the year when the Portuguese discovered a group of Christians from the Mar Thomas Church that he had established 1,500 years earlier. And finally, Thomas lost his life serving the Lord on the east coast of India, in modern-day Madras, around 40 years after these events had taken place. And ironically, he did so being killed by a spear, the very wound of which Jesus invited him to investigate for himself. But doubt's the end now, they're just the beginning. This morning I want to encourage you that in that moment when Thomas was invited by his risen Lord to inspect the wounds, wounds that were created, that were endured by Jesus for him, in that moment he experienced the resurrection of the living God, and he believed. I want to encourage you, even now, with whatever doubts you might have about who you are with God, about what he can do with you, about how he wants to bless you, give those doubts to him and come and invite the living God to remind you of the wounds that he endured for you. Should we just take a couple of moments to be silent? And if the things that you struggle with, you struggle to see God in them, there are areas that you've struggled to see God's power at work, changes that you long for God to make, but you somehow doubt that he can do it, speak them out quietly, silently to yourself, to God now. Let him hear your voice.